you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hello and welcome into At The Yard. I'm Corey Seidman, joined by former Phillies closer Ricky Vitalico. I'm here in New York City for the start of the Phillies-Mets series, and Ricky's back in Philly holding it down for the pre- and post-game shows. So, Ricky, I wanted to start with this. And by the way, thanks to everybody out there who subscribes and rates At The Yard. Keep the reviews and ratings coming. We really appreciate them. So, Ricky, the Phillies have made a lot of roster moves over this last week. Several different players hit the injured list with hamstring strains. Just wanted to get your reaction to the Phillies losing Gene Segura and Scott Kingery within a few days of each other there.
I think the most important part of the Phillies lineup is that number two slot and is Gene Segura. I really believe that he's a guy that kind of keeps everything going. Look, the leadoff spot has been getting on base. Gene Segura has been doing his job in the two hole, not only hitting the baseball, but getting on base the way he does. So I think it's been very important. I mean, Scotty Kingery, another guy who was really striking the ball well. It looked like his confidence was growing. You know, my biggest concern with Kingery is I hope, you know, when he comes back, he doesn't lose a little bit, because sometimes you lose that tick when you come back and you lose that feel for the baseball when you're hitting. So, you know, you're hopeful that things just work out for him and that he doesn't miss a beat, because if he does, you know, you don't want to see him go back to where he was last year. I don't think Segura will be that big of a problem. I think he comes back, he fits right into the lineup. Now, let's start by saying thank goodness it's no longer 15 days, because this team could be in real, real big trouble. I mean, right now what you're looking at is a ball club that, you know, has some guys that could fill in. Gosselin's done a nice job since he's been filling in. And really, Cesar goes back to his regular spot and then other guys fill in the outfield. But look, you know, the lineup has not been the same. It hasn't been as dynamic. It's been kind of a little bit of a battle for these guys. I almost feel like I went back to last year, because the lineup is not the same as it ever was. The lineup's been changed. It's changed again for this game. And I think this is where Gabe Kapler has to really stand up and figure out a way to battle his guys through this with some help from lineup moves.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if you look at that first week to 10 days of the season when the Phillies didn't have to make any roster moves and it was the same lineup every single day, well, now you're seeing Kapler tinker with it. Monday night, for example, the Phillies went with JT Realmuto in the two-hole for the first time this season. Kapler kind of talked about how that was designed to get more plate appearances for some of the top hitters. His inclination initially going into this series against the Mets was to keep Harper, Hoskins, Realmuto as the 3-4-5 because of how well those three have done in those spots. But when he kind of put pen to paper, he saw that Realmuto just made the most sense in the two-hole. You mentioned Scott Kingery and potentially losing all the positive vibes that he was feeling earlier in the season. What do you think is what is important for him to do during this down period here? Because his hamstring strain does sound like it's a little more serious than the ones that Gene Segura and Odubel Herrera are dealing with. Segura, for example, sounds like he'll be ready to return on Saturday. His IL stint was backdated to April 17th, so he's able to return on Saturday. But Kingery sounds like he's going to miss a little more time. What do you think he needs to do during this period to keep himself sharp?
Hand-eye coordination drills. I really believe that. I really believe tracking pitches. You don't have to do a lot. You can go into a bullpen scenario and stand in for a guy warming up, or stand in for the starters that are throwing bullpens. It's all about tracking and making sure your twitch muscles, you know, stay on track. You know, you go in there, you see pitches, so you feel like you're not missing a beat, because once you feel like you're missing a beat and you feel like you've taken a step backwards, that's where all the negativity comes from. Look, this is a guy that's gotten himself to a good point this season. He started off nicely. He's striking the ball well. He's hitting to both sides of the field. Everything was kind of going his way, and then all of a sudden an injury knocks you back down. And the thing about injuries, I mean, I don't care what anybody says, especially if it's going to take a while to get back, you lose that game feel. So for Kingery, the biggest thing to do is don't lose that game feel. Do whatever you can to feel like you're still in the game, to feel like you're still seeing pitches. I know you can't move a lot on your legs, but you could still stand in and watch a pitcher throw his bullpen. And I think that would help him out, help the Phillies out but when he comes back. And take your time on your rehab, because most likely if he's out for an extended period, he'll get a week down in the minor leagues.
Ricky, I want to shift gears here to the rotation. Aaron Nola in the series at Coors Field, he entered that series having three straight down outings, allowing five runs or more, something he didn't do once all of last season. And against the Rockies early in that game, it looked like it was going to be some continued struggles for Nola. The first three hitters of the game all hit the ball. The exit velocity was 101 miles per hour or higher, which right. is, I mean, just shows you how hard Nola was getting hit early in that game. But then he kind of turned things around, ended up allowing just three runs over 5 2/3, struck out nine, got some really key strikeouts, the final two batters that he faced. Did you see that as a step in the right direction for Nola, like in a big way, a small way, or not at all?
I would say probably in a bigger way more than anything else. Look, you look at Colorado, that's not an easy place to pitch for anybody. You don't get a feel on the baseball. I know for a fact Aaron really hasn't had a great feel for the baseballs this season. He's definitely said that they've been slick. So, I mean, I look at this and say to myself, I think he got to the point. And I think he got to the point where he said, you know what, enough is enough. You know, I've already given up three runs already today. Let's turn this around right now. And that's what it almost looked like. It almost looked like he was like, all right, can this get any worse? And instead he said, no, I'm not going to let it get worse. I'm going to start making my pitches. And if you watch that game, his fastball looked like it started getting that low sink on it again. And that's something that he really needs in his repertoire, is fastball location. And I think he did a really nice job of that after the fact, after he gave up those first few runs. I think he really got into game mode instead of like forcing himself to make pitches. He just threw the ball where he wanted to.
I mean, the Phillies really need him to get back to the point, maybe not the point that he was at last season, because it's rare to see a pitcher, you know, post a 2.37 ERA in that many innings. But they need Nola to be more of a pitcher that he was last season, because you can't rely on guys like Jake Arrieta to pitch to a 2.25 ERA all season, or for Vince Velasquez to continue giving you quality type of starts. You know, Velasquez, you mentioned fastball location. I thought his fastball location, for the most part, was very good out in Coors Field. I had some concerns going into that start for Vinny, because the previous three times he had gone to Coors Field, he had a 6.14 ERA, and he just did so much nibbling. He had nine walks in 14 2/3 innings in Colorado going into that series. But he had, in my opinion, one of the best fastballs that I've seen him have as a Philly. It was 95-96, but it looked a little more like 97-98 based on the swings and misses he was getting. What did you see out of Vince? I mean, was it anything new, or was it just the typical Velasquez fastball we see when he's locked in?
I think he was more locked in. But if you noticed, I'm not saying, look, you have to slow your mind down when you go to Coors Field. You kind of have to slow everything down. And I'm not saying like tempo-wise, that's not what I'm talking about. But it's all about staying within your mechanics and staying behind the baseball, and make sure you make your pitches, make sure you have your downhill plane. And it's funny, because I didn't learn that until about my fourth time finally going into Coors Field, that if you're trying to overthrow the ball there, and your ball will stay flat. I think that's the one thing you really have to do, is relax out there and try to stay on top of the baseball. And especially because Vince is a fastball, curveball type guy. That curveball at Coors, you really have to stay back on, and you really got to make sure you stay on top of, because if you try to throw any breaking pitches too hard out there, you get the spinners, and they stay up like balloons, and that is the worst pitch in Coors Field that you could imagine. Your fastball, at least you could throw side to side. That curveball, you start spinning it, and you don't get a good pull down on it, you will get beat up in that ballpark. But I will say this much. The one thing I saw about Vince, seemed very relaxed, very content with what he was doing, and I thought his mechanics stayed very strong all game. You put those three things together, I think that turns into a very good outing for Vince. And in my biggest opinion, I think that is a perfect place to have a good outing, because you go out there, then you think you could pitch anywhere. And hopefully Velasquez comes out of there thinking like that.
Yeah, and luckily for the Phillies, they're not going to have to go back to Coors Field until next season. I mean, that place has been a house of horrors for them. They've lost seven of the last eight. I wanted to get your thought, though, on, you know, what's going on with Nola isn't unique to him. Around the league, a lot of aces are off to very slow starts. Yeah. You know, you have Chris Sale, who struggled with the Red Sox, the velocity's down. Even Max Scherzer got beat up on Sunday by the Marlins, of all teams, in Miami. So, I mean, you have Sale, you have Scherzer. Corey Kluber's been off to a poor start. What do you make of this? Is it just baseball randomness, or do you think there's, you know, do you think it's just the innings getting to these guys? Like Nola, for example, obviously is by far his biggest workload last season. Sale pitched into the World Series. What are you seeing early here?
You know what? You'd love to just say it's something simple. I mean, but there have all the guys have. There's been so many pitchers come out and say the balls are slick. They're not rubbing up the baseballs. Look, grip is very important. I don't care who you are, and I think this does have something to do with it. I don't care what anybody says. I really believe that if you're not putting the Delaware River mud on that baseball and rubbing it up, you're gonna have some problems with your grip. The other thing is look, location, and it's been a tough thing for Aaron Nola. If you look at his location, not so much late in that game in Colorado, but all his other starts. I mean, his breaking balls were spinning, leaving him up in the zone, getting hit hard. You look at Sale, his velocity is not even close to what it was. DeGrom had elbow issues, so that question answered. So there are some answers to the questions out there, but to just say that, you know, all these guys went south at one time, I think it's kind of odd. You know what I mean? I just think there's something to do with the baseballs. I think there's something to do with a mindset. And quite frankly, in Nola's case, I think a lot has to also do with the weather. He's pitched in some miserable games with weather-wise, and that definitely bears on you. I mean, they don't call them the boys of summer for nothing.
Yeah, that really is true. I mean, aside from opening day when Nola got some, you know, unseasonable warmth, he has dealt with the conditions, and that's something that any player kind of has to go through in the month of April. Is also a consideration late in the season where the Phillies want to get to in October. But, you know, okay, it's only the third week of April here. We're not even at the end of the month. And the Phillies have really worked their bullpen hard so far because of extra inning games. I mean, there was from last Saturday through this past weekend, they were averaging 10.7 innings per game during a six-game stretch because so many went to extras. And as a result, that means that Adam Morgan has appeared 11 times in the Phillies' first 20 games, Hector Neris 10 times, Pat Neshek 10 times. Is this concerning to you? I mean, when you can kind of think back to earlier, you know, when you were playing and, you know, you were one of the most important pitchers in a bullpen, can you remember seasons where, because of necessity, that you were just used so frequently in the month of April? And if so, did you feel the effects of that later on in the year?
Yeah, I did feel the effects of it. As a matter of fact, I had elbow surgery because of it. I guess it was 96 I was closing. It was probably my easiest workload. 97, we had a setup guy, Kenny Ryan. And after Kenny got hurt, I had to kind of take over both roles, which was not, you know, it's not the greatest way to go about something. And for me, it took its toll on me. Yeah, it started with the elbow and went to my shoulder. When you start going too many innings or pushing yourself over that limit, yeah, it gets tough. But, I mean, you also said that, what, Neris has 11 out of 21 games, or in 20 games. I think that's somewhat normal. I mean, it's not like Gabe uses these guys every single day. And if they go 2 days in a row, they get days off. So, you know, if somebody says they're tired out there, I think it's hogwash. I really believe that, look, you're getting paid to pitch in games. Don't you want to be in those games? That's the way I've always played. So I can't say that 11, you know, 11 outings is too many, because I think like 10 would be right on the nose. So 10 out of 20, that's perfect for a reliever. Isn't that what you want every other game? That would be perfect.
I guess this is where – you know, the big question lies, is the Phillies haven't really gotten on a long winning streak so far. I mean, they won the first four games of the season, for example, but since then they haven't had a winning streak that long. And when they are on a stretch where, you know, they've won 6 out of 7, 8 out of 9, that means that the top relievers are going to be used more often than not, because right, you're not getting complete games. So there's going to be a temptation to use Pat Neshek a ton, to use Adam Morgan as much as they have so far. And I guess it's like, how do you find the right balance of trying to win every game while also trying to preserve these guys for when you need them most later in the season, in September, in October? So I guess really that boils down to, do they have enough reliable relievers? What do you think? I mean, with David Robertson and Tommy Hunter on the injured list, do the Phillies have enough relievers right now, or should they look to maybe sign someone?
They most certainly do not. And I think what's still glaring is that we're still seeing a guy who's closing out a game come in for two innings or things like that. You need a guy that's durable for that ninth inning period. I mean, you look at the Mets and Diaz, they got a guy, right? Yeah, I just think a winning team should always have that finish up guy that could really shut the door. I mean, is there a definitive answer? People will give you the definitive answer of a Craig Kimbrel. I'm not really sure, because even if he gets here, he's not going to be here for a month, month and a half after getting ready, is the way I look at it. So you've already lost 2 months of the season. I just really believe that you have to make sure you give these guys rest the way it is nowadays, and just make sure everybody stays healthy. If you feel any little twitches, for instance, David Robertson, he felt a little twitch. They shut him down. It's early in the year. You could do that. Hopefully he comes back strong and ready to go. Tommy Hunter, nobody knows what's going on there. But when you have two veterans that aren't ready to go, I think, yeah, you're going to be taxed in your bullpen. And quite frankly, I'm not – look, every squirrel finds a nut. I think we agree with that, that guys go out there and pitch gems. We saw it with Arano, last week with the six strikeouts. But – you know what? Everything comes to reality at some point. And I do not think the Phillies have a strong enough bullpen to survive the whole season the way it is right now. Absolutely not.
Right. And that's what kind of worries me, too. You mentioned Edwin Diaz. When I look at Edwin Diaz come into games for the Mets or previously with the Mariners, if a batter reaches base against him, it almost feels like a fluke. Like, you expect him to either strike out or retire every batter he faces. And when he has a bad outing, it's a shock.
Right.
Whereas someone like Hector Neris, you know, if he misses his location on one split, the entire ninth inning is different. And he's been able to gut out some really, you know, some tightrope acts in the ninth inning. I mean, I think back to, earlier last week when he had the bases loaded, he hit a guy, he walked a guy, and he was able to fire strike three by Keon Broxton to end that game. But if you put yourself in that position, you know, more than half the time, it's not going to go your way. So I guess the question is, like, can the Phillies find a groove in the rotation where the starters are consistently able to give them six and two-thirds innings to give that bullpen some of the rest? And, like, one major key to that is Jake Arrieta, who so far has been so good. I mean, a 2.25 ERA he carried into the start against the Mets on Monday night. His sinker's working, his changeup's working, his curveball's really snapping and getting some freezing hitters and getting swings and misses. Have you seen enough out of Jake Arrieta yet to believe that he could recapture the magic he had with the Cubs? Or do you think that after a while he's kind of going to revert to the pitcher he was last season when it was, you know, a mid-threes ERA for most of the year?
No, you know what? The one thing, if you watch him this year, he's really hiding the ball well. He's actually hiding it behind his head. And then next thing you know, it's on you. And the other thing with Jake is that you just talked about his changeup. His changeup is outstanding right now. The decision that has to be made for a hitter when that ball's coming in is a split second decision. And think about what Jake Arrieta does best. He's got a ball that moves. I'll just focus on a right-handed hitter. He has a changeup that could dive down and in. He has a sinker that will dive straight down. He has a slider / cutter that'll go away, and then a curveball that'll go down. I think he's got everywhere kind of covered. Do you understand what I mean? He covers the whole plate with movement. And he'll sneak in a four-seam fastball every once in a while that still has a little bit of run on it, but it still will sneak by you. I just think when you have all those pitches in the different directions he could throw a ball, because it's not the speed he's throwing it, it's the direction. And you have to almost guess as a hitter when you're up at the plate. Unless he leaves something up in the middle of the plate, you're going to have a hard time getting to this guy. If he's down in the zone and his ball's moving the way it is right now, last year he used that movement negatively. This year he's using it positively.
And you can tell that Arrieta really has his swagger back. I mean, not that he ever suffers for confidence, but, I mean, Gabe Kapler said today in New York, for example, that with Arrieta, he sees a pitcher whose mentality is he's trying to prove to the world that he can be the pitcher that he was in 2014, 2015, when he was a Cy Young winner and a regular Cy Young finalist. Rick, I wanted to hit you on a strategic thing. So over the weekend in Colorado, we saw a situation where the Phillies had runners on second and third with two outs, and Bryce Harper came to the plate in the seventh inning. The Phillies were up by one run.
Right.
And the Rockies attacked him with a lefty reliever, Mike Dunn.
Right.
A guy the Phillies are used to seeing a ton. And Harper hit a three-run home run off Dunn, and it was his second homer against a lefty this season. He also has two doubles. He's at 389 against lefties here in the early going, and he's reached base more often than he hasn't against lefties, 12 times on base in 23 plate appearances. If you were game planning against the Phillies and you were in that situation, are you going lefty-lefty against Harper, or are you intentionally walking him to go righty-righty against Rhys Hoskins? Because we've already seen the Phillies succeed either way the opposing manager tries that.
Well, I think that was opening day with the Grand Slam, right? I think that opened up a lot of eyes to people that were saying, all right, we'll just walk Harper and move on. Look, Harper has always swung the bat well against lefties, and you make that one mistake, he will make him pay. The thing about a lefty against Harper, you could take this any way you want. If I have a lefty that could dot the outside corner and then throw in off the plate, I don't have a problem pitching to Harper. But if you have a lefty who is not successful in either one of those spots, you have to put him on. That's just the way I think about this, because obviously against the lefty, there's always a little bit of leak from a left-handed hitter. We've seen Harper have some problems with the slider, right? From lefties, that sweeping slider. He kind of pulls off the ball if he doesn't see it right out of the hand. But then if you're leaving that stuff on the inside part of the plate, he will destroy you. I don't care if you're lefty, righty, or throw with your foot. He will destroy you. And that's what you have to look for. You have to think about, all right, I got a guy out there and done. Can he pinpoint a corner fastball outside to a lefty? Can he go in on the hands after that and not leave it over the middle of the plate? That if you could answer those questions, those two questions with positives, then you go after him. If not, you put him on.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. As much as I had seen of Harper over the years in his time with the Nationals, I did not realize he was this good against lefties. It's not just a small sample size. If you look at the last 5 years, Harper has the second highest OPS against lefties among a left-handed hitter behind only Joey Votto. For example, he has a higher batting average against lefties than Freddie Freeman. He has a higher slugging percentage against lefties than Christian Yelich.
He doesn't miss mistakes.
Yeah.
The left-handed mistakes he seems to enjoy, which is odd. Because usually if you're a left-handed hitter, and obviously the only reason that lefties are very effective against lefties is because they don't see them as much. I mean, everybody will say, well, it's a righty on righty. Well, righties see righties all the time.
Right.
So, I mean, when you don't see left-handed pitching as much, yeah, it becomes an issue. But I think Harper has a different recognition. He's thinking, I'm going to hit the mistakes. That's what he's thinking.
Yeah, two-thirds of the pitchers in baseball these days are right-handed pitchers, and that number is even higher if you limit it just to starting pitchers. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like a pick-your-poison thing. That's the beauty of how this Phillies lineup is constructed, and the offense is going to, you know, carry this team throughout the season. I put this out there the other day that the Phillies have the second-highest OBP out of the one spot. They have the fourth-highest batting average out of the two spot, the fourth-highest OPS out of the three spot, the best OPS out of the four spot, and the best OPS out of the eight spot. You know, focusing lastly on that eight spot, it's where Michael Franco has occupied most of the season. Recently, he's been moved up to five because of the injuries the Phillies are dealing with. I would fully expect that when this full lineup is back, that Franco would bat eighth. Just curious for your thoughts there. I mean, do you think that if he thrives in the five hole that he could stay up five or six? Or
no,
do you think it's just worth to keep him eight?
I just think once everybody gets healthy, you go back to what was working. I really do. I mean, look, I mean, you played some games out in Colorado. You're going to get some at-bats just because guys are missing. I don't think he cares at this point. I think he's gotten to a good point in his career and his swing that he really doesn't care where he hits. But who are you going to move down? I mean, that's the question. When everybody's healthy, you're not going to move anybody down.
I guess Cesar Hernandez has been the least productive of the Phillies' regular players, but my thing with Franco in the eight hole is that he provides more value there because A, of the power, you know, and B, he has more to gain by the intentional walks and by being forced to take more pitches to turn the lineup over than Cesar Hernandez does.
True.
Because Cesar's best quality is his plate selection that he already has, whether he's batting 6-8 or 2.
Right. No, that's the whole thing is that, look, it seems as though Franco was really comfortable down down in the eight. So why bother? What I mean, you only move them up because guys are injured, you know, and you're going to move them back most likely when guys are back. Because, look, you love McCutcheon in the one spot. You love Segura in the two. Harper's definitely staying at three. Hoskins is definitely staying at four. Real Muto's done fine out of the five. So what are you going to do? Where are you going to put him? I mean, I think that I know you're thinking seven or eight or six. I mean, look, that doesn't matter at that point. You're still in the bottom half of the order.
Yeah, and really, like, over the course of a full season, how much does it really benefit you if you have Franco six as opposed to eight? I think that lineup construction is something we talk about all the time, but in terms of tangible on-field the impact, it's probably not as significant as a lot of us think. But right. I'm eager to see what this offense looks like when the weather heats up, because, you know, there was some cold weather in Colorado, some cold weather to start the week in New York. But I mean, once the weather heats up, the way
it's
that you
been miserable, let's face it.
Yeah. But I mean, what you talk about with the composition of the baseballs combined with this Phillies lineup, I mean, think about some of the run totals we could see in mid-July in South Philadelphia.
You know how the ball flies at that ballpark. It's going to be fun. At some point, I think we're going to see some records broken. That's just a guess. But I'm telling you right now, this lineup, everybody could hit the ball out of the yard. I think there's going to be some wiffle ball games over there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. All right, well, thank you so much, Ricky Bowe, for Ricky Bitalico. I'm Corey Seibin here at Citi Field as the Phillies open up a three-game series against the New York Mets, hoping for some good weather this week and beyond. So thanks for listening to At the Yard. A reminder to rate and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk to you later in the week.